It feels like that like inbound ebook white paper engine has ran its course, unless the content is truly unique or the data is truly unique. I think we got to the point where the piece of content was just a thing.
Welcome back to the Promised Brand Podcast, everybody. Very excited. We have been doing a series. I've been doing a series on LinkedIn called The Content Sauna, and it is both hysterical, accurate, and maybe offensive, but I haven't quite figured that out yet, and no one's really told me, so we're just going to deal with it. But very excited because it's got me through different connections and different collaborations, but it's got me cued into the content world in the B2B brand space right now. And one of those main sources of education, resource for content is actually something called The Juice. And if you haven't heard of The Juice, you need to go look this up, because today I'm with the founder and CEO, Mr. Jonathan Gandoff. Jonathan, welcome to the Promise Brand, my friend.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for the kind words. And I think it's fair to say that sauna content is hot.
It is hot. It's on the rise. And if I was a betting man, I'd put my money here over the S&P 500 anyway.
Yes.
So, you know, this is obviously where 2024 is going, and you're going to miss out if you don't dive in. I mean, let's be honest. Jonathan, the juice is a pretty wild space considering the world of B2B content right now, because we talk to a lot of our clients who are coming from much of a corporate space. And I hate to use the word corporate because I don't want it to be bad, but there's certain connotations with the suit and tie culture where getting into content only means white pages and white papers and blogs and newsletters that are really pull your teeth out kind of stuff. And yet you have something that is kind of pushing against all of that in The Juice. What got you to start this entity?
Yeah, great question. So I've been individual contributor on marketing teams. I've led marketing teams. I've led sales and marketing teams. Most recently, I was at a really cool healthcare analytics platform, leading sales, dev, and marketing team. And we had rich data from our platform that allowed us to create really, really cool content. You know, things like how much money a business can save if they can decrease the diabetes risk in their employee base by 10%, like actually being able to quantify things like that, like really cool stuff. So we'd create awesome content.
Yeah.
And then if you're in that corporate environment, some of you are probably familiar with what we would do with it. We'd post it on our blog. Mm-hmm. We'd send it out via email, and we'd draft copy for our team internally to share on LinkedIn. We'd do that for 2 days, and then we'd be on to the next really cool piece of content, on to the next piece of content. I call it the content hamster wheel. It just felt like we were on this this hamster wheel of creating content. Mm-hmm. And, you know, eventually you bury really good content on your blog, and it's an internet purgatory. It's not providing you any value. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's ranking, likely not anymore. Not providing you any value, not providing your audience any value. It's just sitting on your blog doing nothing. I mean, I had that experience at previous stops as well. So I had this kernel of an idea that was Spotify for B2B content. It's no matter what we do as consumers, there's a platform that connects buyer and seller, or creator and consumer, news, fashion, music, movies, homes, cars, the list goes on and on. But in B2B content, we are still just posting white papers, blogs, ebooks on our website and fighting each other to drive traffic to our own channel. So what I said the idea was let's put all the B2B content in a single space, attract the content consumer, bring on the content creator, and let the platform, let the software do the connecting of the right people at the right time in the right format. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we've done. We've got 500,000 resources or pieces of content on our platform, 70,000 users, over 500 brands of content on there. So it's a step in the modernization journey. I think, you know, there are still traditional types of content on our platform, but the consumption of how content consumers are engaging with content. I'd like to think we're moving that forward in what we're doing.
Yeah, so this is, all of this is really interesting to me because, you know, as mentioned to you, we just released a podcast with Nick Gaudio. He was head of brand around an amazing company called Rattle, but he and I have been talking a lot about how the market, and specifically the B2B market, wants to see, like the marketers, we want to see things moving over because we see our actual consumer consuming content in the B2B space that is, you know, actually consumable. And so why would anybody in the B2B space stop during their, you know, profitable, busy work day to go read your white paper? And it sounds like this is something you are, you know, not necessarily aggressively, but certainly speaking and working into.
It's interesting. I mentioned all of the consumer examples, and we even struggle with sometimes like comparing ourselves to B2B benchmarks, because really are the consumer of content. It's like a consumer application, right? Yeah. Should we be comparing ourselves to B2B benchmarks or B2C benchmarks?
Right.
But I do think that B2B content is evolving. You've talked about you do great snippets, great video clips. Mm-hmm. I think it's getting more snackable is the other fun like buzzword people like to throw around. What we find, and this is the joy of our data, right? We have 500,000 resources, 70,000 users, 500 brands. I always say when people are consuming B2B content, it is because they have a acute question or pain point or task they are trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And this is something we coach our customers on all the time. You know, it is so easy and exciting and trendy for us as marketers, myself included, I do this, to talk about what's trending, what's emerging, what's sexy, right? But that's really not what, you're right. People don't want to consume B2B content for trends. That's just like, that's not a real thing.
It's a rare few, right? It's a rare group that is getting paid to do that right now.
Exactly. What a content consumer wants in B2B, we have seen with data, is they want to be better at the basics. Mm. It's very like simple stuff. And I think especially right now when resources are shrinking, sadly, like team sizes are decreasing.
Yeah.
A lot of people are being asked to do things they've never done before, and they're just trying to be better at basics. And so I always tell our customers, share what you know, share templates, share toolkits, and help your audience be better at the basics.
Yeah. There's a real radical benefit to the fact that the juice, you guys aren't necessarily a content creator platform.
No, we're a content distribution platform. We want to take what you're already creating and just share it with the right audience because it's out there. We just want to help you find it. We play traffic cop between content consumers and content creators.
And there's a huge benefit as marketers and as companies at large to come to the juice and say, hey, over the past 6 months, what content is actually being consumed?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned 6 months. That we see that, I'm gonna go on a soapbox here for a moment, but
please,
just because you mentioned this, I think I maybe even interrupted your question, but you know, the mantra of the masses, I sometimes call it, is that like great content converts. And I say, no, great content does not convert. You know, nobody's ever like, somebody has.
Yeah.
But that's not the point of content. You used the word even before we started recording, edutain.
Yeah.
I would say great content educates or entertains.
Yeah.
We see between a content touch point and a deal going closed won or closed lost, it's 162 days or about 6 months.
Yep.
So that's, sorry, anytime I hear 6 months, I'm like, that's the time frame you should be thinking about content.
Right.
Is that 6 month time frame, not like what you create today is going to convert tomorrow.
In the terms of one single customer, by the way, too.
Right.
Right. If we as marketers can think and get our whole VP level suites to think, hey, this is, if our sales lead time is going to be 6 months on average, then that means everything we're going to put out to them brand side or customer experience side will be what they believe about us. Right. And so it makes it's an interesting thing to me because it's hard to balance the ROI on that. You even, you were just, I noticed you wrote about this on LinkedIn just recently, you know, a really like valuable, you know, piece of content specifically on LinkedIn oftentimes performs worse than something that's like a really dumb hot take. And I mean, I've found this to be true with my content as well, but where is the disconnect in that micro pinpoint of data for you? And maybe even talk to the pain point around that, that you're experiencing.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mystery. I wish we could solve that one. I'm fortunate because I've got a lot of dumb hot takes, so I can fire those off all day. Yeah. And we also have a lot of cool data that I'll share and won't get any interaction.
Yeah, right.
You know, I do think like the education and entertainment. Mm-hmm. You do a great job of this. Like, you just have to trust that stuff converts. I think there's a disconnect. Where the disconnect is right now is that I think at the executive level, a lot of CMOs are presenting a slide in their board meeting that has number of leads, right? That's how people at that level are familiar with measuring marketing, is through leads.
Yeah.
I think it's so like old school. I think like there's a lot of habits that need to be broken to undo some of that. Mm-hmm. But I think marketers, you mentioned this earlier, like we as marketers know this. We know it's changing. We know we need to do different things. But the pressure is being put on us top down to still hit that lead number or hit that download number, that form fill number. Mm-hmm. We're starting to see it slowly change. I've started to see MQAs, marketing qualified accounts, instead of marketing qualified leads, which I think is interesting. I think intent data is helping drive some of that. So there's a groundswell. I think it's going to take a little bit more time, but I think people like yourself, brands like yours are helping increase that groundswell.
Yeah. You make me think about kind of like, you know, someone like Ogilvy revolutionized what we know as like marketing today and advertising today, and kind of changed everyone's thinking around it a little bit. But there was, you know, still 60, 70 years ago, even 30 years ago, a lot of marketing was, you know, tapping into manipulation, tapping into psychology, which it's on some level, it's not bad. It's just how far we take it ethically. As I think about that and the change that we're experiencing and seeing, especially in the B2B space in 2024 and beyond, as far as you see it, how have you seen the way marketers market change versus the way a C-suite needs to see performance from them?
Unfortunately, I haven't seen it change a ton, and I think that's part of the problem. I always reference, I think you're right on the psychology. I think like great marketing is sometimes just like towing the line between creepy and cool, and keeping it just on the cool side, right? I think like even marketers, we sometimes have different, we're okay with more data sharing than the average consumer is, right? But anyway, so where it hasn't changed, what I was saying earlier, is that measuring marketing by leads. I always reference the rise of inbound marketing as something that's kind of led us to this point that we're at now. When inbound marketing really came to be 2010, 2012, that kind of time frame, led by HubSpot, forms were really big, gated content was really big.
Yeah.
It was new and novel, and people, it was unfamiliar to people. Some marketers started doing it, and then like it worked, and so like everybody started doing it, right?
Yeah.
And like we hit this law of diminishing returns, and now everybody knows what's happening when they're being part of an inbound funnel, right? Like, and so people aren't doing it as much anymore. And it feels like that playbook has kind of ran its course, and everybody's kind of starved for this new B2B playbook. And I kind of even hate that buzzword, but it feels like that like inbound ebook white paper engine has ran its course, unless the content is truly unique or the data is truly unique. I think we got to the point where the piece of content was just a thing that we could, all marketers cared about, not all, But a lot of marketers, they just wanted to have a form or a gated piece of content. The content behind the form didn't really matter. We got to that point. And now we've started to see that pendulum swing back where people are sharing you know, things like proprietary data or compensation benchmarks or things that are really high value. I'll still fill out a form for that stuff, but you know, I know there's a lot of things out there that I'm, you know, either not going to fill out a form or I'm going to put Daffy Duck in as my name, and good luck to that poor SDR.
So sorry. How can we as marketers, the people driving these initiatives, these playbooks, these, you know, changes and tactics, how can we make it a better experience for our users?
We ran a report in the fall that was on the state of gated versus ungated content. And I had my own eyes opened up to by some things that marketers, really good marketers, were doing that I hadn't given thought to previously.
Yeah.
I think using data, not just to hand off to your sales dev team or your sales team, business dev team, whatever that may be, but using gated to actually personalize the experience. You know, there's all sorts of website personalization, content personalization. I think everyone knows when their data is being kind of used, or we are all familiar enough with the internet at this point to know that our data is out there. And I think brands that act responsible with that data are being rewarded, and brands that are irresponsible with that data and maybe, you know, abusing it, not in like an illegal or like super nefarious way, but, you know, you're getting the SDR email every day for 3 months, or the phone call, whatever that may be. You know, I think they are struggling. But I think there's a flip side to that, where brands that can deliver a really curated experience are being rewarded for that capability.
How do you see that kind of playbook, given this newer content move? I think in the past like 5-10 years, people, you know, especially LinkedIn as a platform for content development, you know, you see other companies like Honeystack comes to mind too, that are kind of making their own Netflix, you know, type experience, and creating different like documentaries and almost like mini movies, right, based on their education. How do you see like what kind of plays are actually working and going to work based off data that a company is receiving?
So,
and you can be generalistic about this.
Yeah, I'm going to sound like a general marketer, but then I'll maybe get more specific. Yeah. I think really like intimately understanding your brand and being brave with it. You know, for you jumping in a sauna and recording a video is on brand for you. But there's a lot of brands out there, if they did that, it would feel forced and weird, and people would be like, it would feel very, it wouldn't feel genuine or authentic, right? So I think you have to know your brand, you have to know your people, but then you need to be brave with that and be brave to do something that others aren't doing, to, because it is all about pattern interrupt now, right? It's kind of the post I made that you referenced, where like the dumb hot take gets more engagement, not because it's a dumb hot take, but just because it's different than all the other BS that's out there, right? And so I think you have to like really be brave with your brand. Now, to get super tactical, the things I always recommend is proprietary data. If your platform has proprietary data, that's how you'll stand out in the generative AI world. And templates. We find templates, we call them templates and toolkits on our platform. They outperform any other content format by 3x, by a factor of 3x on our platform. So I think those are some ways. I think it's very like brave and have fun with your brand, or just like the documentary, like go above and beyond the pattern interrupt. Or the very tactical, like you just need to have really quality, usable data and content.
Yeah, and just for some context, you know, let's think about a B2B SaaS company right now. You know, maybe they're 5 years old. Maybe they're doing decently at you know, building up their, you know, their inbound, and they've been able to collect data, you know, over the course of 1,000+ customers and beyond. what kind of specific user interactions, especially in, you know, the SaaS space, we've got remote workers, we've got people online. What kind of data are you kind of looking at from a juice platform to say, hey, these aspects are actually more important than we, you know, previously thought? Or is there anything that's new in that data that you're looking at that is becoming more helpful for people who are using the juice?
Yeah, I'll give you one that's super tactical in how people are using the juice, and then one that's a little bit more fun and outside the box.
Yeah.
In terms of what we like to do with data from our platform is look at what we can tie individual pieces of content to how much pipeline they're generating and how much mm-hmm. revenue they're generating. Mm-hmm. So for us, a classic example I always give is there's a blog post that is how the juice uses the juice and other channels for content distribution.
Yeah,
it has like 50 views on our platform, which is not a lot for our yeah. brand on our platform, but it's the second largest pipeline driver for us.
Wow.
And the third largest total revenue driver for us. So we look at that and we say, we should talk more about how the juice uses the juice, which
yeah.
we actively are trying to do right now. And we should talk more about content distribution, which we're doing right now. So
yeah.
that's something we always work on our brand partners with as well. I think traditionally marketers look at total engagement or views, downloads, and that's mm. how they're making decisions. If you can actually tie revenue to that, you can start to see what content's resonating maybe at different stages in the sales cycle
yeah.
or what is actually, you know, you could write something that's very engaging, but it's not going to have any business results for you, or vice versa, like
yeah.
the example I just gave.
Right.
Something that we are leaning into as a team kind of outside of our platform in kind of on user data, customer data, et cetera, is we're trying to see clusters of people in market.
Mm.
Where are they actually like physically located, and how do we go meet with them? I think
yeah.
the best marketing strategy is breaking bread. And so whether it's an event, whether
so
it's
good.
A we go spin up something, but mm-hmm. if we have customers or users that are clustered in certain areas, let's go shake their hand and
yeah.
get their feedback and have some fun with them in person.
Yeah. It's amazing the amount of event-based marketing I have seen come out of, especially this past year or two. I think post-COVID really opened up a door to help us re-engage with in-person events as not just a sales platform, but a marketing and customer user experience opportunity.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think both out of those events and prior to the events, the room for content generation to either promote or bring people into them, you get a whole nother beautiful layer of opportunity in there that your business, I think, didn't previously have before even, you know, doing in person. So I love that you're talking about that. And you know, obviously, you know, there's the one that's on the top of my mind, you're coming into to Austin for soon, is Spring by Winter. And, you know, Winter is obviously a
yeah.
pretty big marketing agency out here in Austin. And it's one of, as far as I know, John, one of the only kind of legit marketing meetups where it's marketing professionals coming together to, you know, like you're saying, break bread and connect, and not just connect in a way that's like, hey, we got to go build pipeline, but kind of empathize with the fact that like we're being pushed to do things that
yeah
just don't matter. And so it's amazing to see, you know, professionals getting together to push the standards a little bit too. And which just brings me to another thought here for you. I'm seeing a lot of this, you know, considering Spring, considering other marketing events, marketers not necessarily fighting against each other or fighting against even competitors anymore, but leaning more into that. Where have you seen that either data or those kind of plays map themselves out in the world of content?
Yeah, I think content collaborations are huge. We
yeah.
have, in our early days, you know, we would have a brand in one space,
mm-hmm.
In a category, you know, maybe the leader, one of the three leaders on our platform, their customer, and then they'd see us announce one of their competitors join the
yeah.
platform. They'd be like, well, wait a second, like, we don't want them like
yeah.
on the platform or whatever. And what I always tell them is, listen, having both of you is going to attract a bigger audience. And then like,
yeah.
it's on you at that point. May the best man win. Like, do you think
yeah.
your content's better than theirs? And they're
ooh.
Like, well, yeah, obviously. And I'm like, well, great. Then like, show this them. Is good for yeah. you. Like you'll, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
And so I always kind of get a kick out of that of like, yeah. hey, it's actually like rising tide raises all boats. Right.
That's good.
We actually struggle because there is no like direct competitor to what yeah. we do. And I sometimes wish we had one that I could point at and be like, we're like them, but better. Right. But
yeah.
So we've tried to like manufacture that a little bit, but I think competition can be really good for the content consumer.
Yeah. Yeah. That is really good. As we just kind of wrap up this conversation, I want to take a step back because we're talking a lot of tactics and we're talking kind of microscopic on the world of content and B2B marketing. The way of which we got there is this thing called the juice. And so I'm curious for you in the past, you know, five year journey about, is that right?
Yeah, four-ish.
Four-ish. Four-ish. Four-ish. The past handful of years,
yeah.
You've been in this journey building this thing. What have you learned about the importance of positioning the right brand and the right experience for your users in the building of the juice? That's, you know, and you mentioned earlier, it's kind of meta because we're talking about how the juice, like our company can even use the juice. And so talk to me just about your thought process in building brand for the juice and how that's impacted your current outcomes.
Yeah, we are still learning a lot. We do not have it figured out after four-ish years. I hope maybe after 5 years we'll be closer. After yeah. 10 years, we'll still probably be working on it. I would say two big learnings. One, we over-invested in brand. We over-indexed on brand early on. We sell marketing to marketers, and yeah. so at our core we just I felt strongly that was always yeah. something we should do, and that's paid off. People think we're way bigger than we are.
That's awesome.
Which I always get a kick out of, and it's been good from an inbound engine.
Yeah.
I'd say the second big lesson that we are still working on is I think so many times we as marketers fall in love with marketing the hero or the solution, and a lot of times we don't do a good enough job marketing the villain or the problem that we solve.
Yeah.
You know, the cliche is, are you a painkiller or are you a vitamin?
Yeah.
I think we are still trying to figure out how to better market the pain that yeah. we solve, because I think people will have a more visceral, more emotional reaction when you're marketing the pain versus yeah. the solution. It'll help drive inbound.
Yep.
And I think that's what people are looking for.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, only 5% of the buyers are actually in market shopping for something. So
yeah.
you have to really find a way to resonate with those other 95% so that when they become that 5%,
yeah.
they come to you. And I think that's something we talk a lot about a team is who is our villain and how do we actually market them better than we do even ourselves.
Yeah. Powerful conversations to have. And you're absolutely right. I don't think in the brand strategy process that is, unfortunately, and I hate to say this, and I don't mean to be too generalist about it, but I think there are a lot of marketers that don't even go down that road because a startup, you know, founder, they have a really great product. And so when you ask them what they do, they just tell you about the really great product, right? Or, you know, B, they've just been doing X, Y, or Z for so long that we are no longer close enough to the problem. We're just trying to pitch solution. And it's actually, I think it's counterintuitive. It may feel counterintuitive because what, you know, you're talking about is like, yeah, stop trying to pitch the hero, like pitch the villain. Well, it's a lot easier for us nowadays to go and talk face to face with a customer and understand, you know, their pain than it has ever been. But at the same time, I wonder if we're limited or if we're overwhelmed by the opportunity that a lot of marketers aren't even going down that road because it's just there are too many possibilities.
I used to be exactly who you're talking about. I thought what we were building was so cool, and it doesn't help that it's kind of complex and there's two sides to it. All I would talk about is us. Early on, I was fortunate. I had a mentor as we were doing a lot of product discovery before even product was live. You know, I'd ask people what their pain point is. They'd tell me something. I'd move on to the next question.
Yeah.
And they gave me a great piece of advice is ask people what their pain point is. Let them answer and force yourself to ask two follow-up questions.
So good.
Because you will get surface level the first time you ask it, you'll get more tactical the second time you ask it, and the third time you ask it, you'll get like an emotional or like a visceral like reaction to something that like they really, really like drives them nuts. And that was like critical to doing some of our product discovery. Yeah. So that's how I always try to, even when we talk to customers, you know, even not specific to our product, I'm like, what pains are you facing right now? And I'll always force myself to ask them two follow-up questions.
So good. Amen to that. I have to be careful. I came from the mental health world. And so this sort of like therapizing for, I used to joke that we were like therapy for people's business because this is what I felt like our job was. And I had to be careful because my wife does not like the second or third deeper question as much as I do in the home. And so I have to be careful about that. But what you're talking about in the reality is a deeper level of storytelling that when, let's say, we watch a, you know, Disney favorite, The Lion King or something beyond, something reaches us. Like we can feel it. We know it. We know why we, you know, maybe we can't even explain it, but we know why, you know, we know we love that movie. There's opportunity for B2B to do that in the exact simple process that you're talking about, asking question, asking deeper question, asking more clarified question. And you also build trust in that process, which I don't think is a talked about enough, like ROI of having that conversation. You're actually, I think too many people are afraid of talking to customers because they're worried about sinking the ship. When in reality, the more questions you ask, the less you talk, the more you're building trust.
Trust and empathy. I think there's so much like we're all just humans. Like, don't forget that. I've in like previous experiences, I worked in the sports world and like, you know, met with some like pretty like cool athletes that, you know, you're nervous around at first, but someone put it to your customer. And you're like, I don't want to say the wrong thing. But then it's like, oh, they're also just a human and they actually appreciate this conversation. Right. I think your customers too, like they appreciate the vulnerability and it's going to build trust, like you say, and a ton of empathy.
Yeah, I love it. Given we love storytelling here, Jonathan, when we talk about kind of, you know, this whole entering the Promise brand, and I just mentioned The Lion King, I like to finish with a very fun question, very serious in many cases, depending on who you're talking to. But in your history, my friend, where would you put your confidence in as your favorite Disney movie?
Oh man. Okay, is Pixar Disney or not?
I will allow it. Shameless plug, not even plug for me, but go read Creativity Inc. because it talks about how Pixar bought Disney in the early 90s and it's a crazy story. So yes, I'll give it to you.
It's in my, I've got a book stack behind me. It's in
my
the book stack.
It's one
me.
Of so, my favorite yes, I, books.
I'll take credit for that.
There you go.
I cry during Finding Nemo in Toy Story.
Oh yeah.
I don't know why, but I mean, I know why, but like those two, I'm not a huge movie watcher, but if Toy Story or Finding Nemo is on, I'll sit down and watch. I've got six nieces and nephews. I raised on those.
Oh my goodness.
I
love it.
Those two are, you know, they tug at my heartstrings. Toy Story came out, I don't know, I assume
early 90s, right?
Same age or the same generation. Mm-hmm. Like it kind of grew, it kind of grew up with us, right? Like, and it kind of followed along our like life journey. So, Toy Story always has a soft spot in my heart.
Yeah, talk about a good marketing scheme there with that team. I love it. You know, this is the reality. We live off stories, and I think those are some of the stories now that are still inspiring even B2B marketers today. And so I love talking about it. Thank you for indulging me in that. Jonathan, as we wrap here, I want to make sure people get connected with you, understand and dive into the juice. I'm still like tip of the iceberg in what the juice can offer. And so I'm learning a lot with it. Where's the best place for people to start with the juice and then get connected with you as well?
Absolutely. So the if you want to go see the platform and build your profile and start getting content recommendations, the best place to do that is app.thejuicehq.com. If you're interested, if you manage, create content, if you're a brand, if you're a company, and you want to learn more about distributing content through the juice, it's just thejuicehq.com. Find me on LinkedIn. I keep posting those dumb hot takes because they keep working, I guess. And I'm always happy to connect there as well.
I love it. Jonathan Gandolf, founder, CEO of The Juice, thank you so much for sharing your time, perspective, and wisdom with us today, my friend.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.